dated December 29, 2016. So it's today's date. And the name of the article is A New Home on Mars, NASA Langley's Icy Concept for Living on the Red Planet. So this is on www.nasa.gov, where I get nearly all of my material from. So I'm going to start reading the article. When astronauts set foot on Mars, they may stay for months rather than days, as they did during Apollo missions to the moon. Now I'm going to interject here. There are certain orbits and certain time frames, or let's call them windows, where we can launch to Mars and then return in a reasonable time, because Mars and its orbit is relatively close to Earth. There are other times when Mars is far away from Earth. So it would be stupid to go to Mars when Mars is far away. It would take so much more fuel and so much more time, and getting back would take so much more fuel and so much more time. So there are certain time windows that NASA will launch or will return or will launch to Mars. I'm talking as if this has already happened, but no, it's maybe 15 years in the future. And there's certain time windows to get back to make the trip the shortest trip possible. Now I'm going to continue on with the article. The surface of Mars has extreme temperatures, and the atmosphere does not provide adequate protection from high energy radiation. So we have to take that into account. So whenever people go out into outer space, they may not be protected by the atmosphere like they are here on Earth. So that is a whole new set of problems it presents for NASA. Now back to the article. So I just finished saying the surface of Mars has extreme temperatures, and the atmosphere, which is very faint, very feeble, does not provide adequate protection from high energy radiation. These explorers will need shelters to effectively protect them from the harsh Martian environment and provide a safe place to call home. Now we're getting kind of a bit of bad weather here, but imagine if we're on Mars, or let's say Saturn or Jupiter, where there's 1,000 mile per hour winds. How could we handle that? That's all these things NASA has to consider before going on a trip. So back to the article. For researchers at NASA's Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia, the best building material for a new home on Mars may lie in an unexpected material, which is ice, starting with a proposed concept called Mars Ice Dome. A group of NASA experts and passionate designers and architects from industry and academia came together at Langley's Engineering Design Studio. The project was competitively selected through the Space Technology Mission Directorate Center Innovation Fund to encourage creativity and innovation within the NASA centers in addressing technology needs. This is just one of many potential concepts for a sustainable habitation on the red planet in support of the agency's journey to Mars. And so says Kevin Vipavets, a facilitator for the design session. He's a senior systems engineer. And quote, after a day dedicated to identifying needs, goals, and constraints, we rapidly assess many crazy out-of-the-box ideas and finally converged on the current ice home design, which provides a sound engineering solution. So what they're going to do, they're going to build their home out of ice. The team at Langley, a home on Mars, that is. The team, hang on, I got to turn the, good, I have to turn auto DJ to manual DJ. Okay, here we go, back to it. A team at Langley had assistance in their design concept study as a collaborative team from Space Exploration Architecture and the Clouds Architecture Office that produced a prize-winning entry for the NASA Centennial Challenge for a 3D-printed habitat. Mars Ice House played a key role in the design session. The Mars Ice Home is a large inflatable torus, a shape similar to an inner tube that is surrounded by a shell of water ice. The Mars Ice Home design has several advantages that make it an appealing concept. It is lightweight and can be transported and deployed with simple robotics, then filled with water before the crew arrives. It incorporates materials extracted from Mars And because water in the ice home could potentially be converted to rocket fuel for the Mars Ascent vehicle, which I know nothing about, the structure itself doubles as a storage tank that can be refilled for the next crew. Another crucial benefit is that water, a hydrogen-rich material, is an excellent shielding material for galactic cosmic rays, and many areas of Mars have abundant water ice just below the surface. Galactic cosmic rays are one of the biggest risks of long stays on Mars. This high-energy radiation can pass through the skin, damaging cells or DNA along the way. That can mean an increased risk for cancer later in life, or at worst, acute radiation sickness. Space radiation is also a significant challenge for those designing potential Mars outposts. That would be an interesting thing to study, space radiation. For example, one approach would envision habitats buried underneath the Martian surface to provide radiation shielding. However, burying the habitats before the crews arrive would require heavy robotic equipment that would need to be transported from Earth. The ice home concept balances the need to provide protection from radiation without the drawbacks of an underground habitat. The design maximizes the thickness of ice above the crew quarters to reduce radiation exposure while also still allowing light to pass through ice and surrounding materials. Maybe underground habitat might be the best because you don't want to get hit by a storm, do you? So says a scientist, doesn't give his first name, but Kempton, and quote, all the materials we've selected are translucent, so some outside daylight can pass through and make it feel like you're in a home and not a cave. Selecting materials that have accomplished this goal was a challenge for material experts. And so says Langley researcher Sheila Ann Thibault, and quote, the materials that make up the ice home will have to withstand many years of use in the harsh Martian environment, including ultraviolet radiation, charged particle radiation, possibly some atomic oxygen, perchlorates, as well as dust storms, although not as fierce as in the movie The Martian. In addition to identifying potential materials, a key constraint for the team was the amount of water that could be reasonably extracted from Mars. Experts who developed systems for extracting resources on Mars indicated that it would be possible to fill the habitat at a rate of 1 cubic meter or 35.3 cubic feet per day. This rate would allow the ice home design to be completely filled in 400 days. The design could be scaled up if water could be extracted at higher rates. Additional design considerations include a large amount of flexible workspace so that crews would have a place to service robotic equipment indoors without the need to wear a pressure suit. To manage temperatures inside the ice home, a layer of carbon dioxide gas would be used as an insulation between the living space and the thick shielding layer of ice. And, like water, carbon dioxide is available on Mars. It's important, Kempton said, for astronauts to have something to look forward to when they arrive on the red planet. After months of travel in space, when you first arrive at Mars and your new home is ready for you to move in, it will be a great day, he said. Yeah, you have to take all these things into account when you have astronauts traveling for 6 or 8 or 9 months in a small little spacecraft. Then they get to Mars. I guess it would make sense. You don't want to have them have a home deep underground where it's dark all the time. That ice home sounds good. Only thing that I would worry about is these storms, because I know there's storms all over the solar system, and they're much worse than the storms here on Earth. So if we think 50 years ahead, will we be on Mars? Will we have a colony on Mars? Wouldn't that be cool to start building a home and then expanding it and have humans living on Mars, as they do on the space station now? So humans live for months at a time on the space station, then they come back. So why not have them live on Mars and keep building a colony, then build a city, and then build many cities? Now, wouldn't that be cool? Hopefully that'll come true one day. So I'm going to take a break now, and when I do come back, I'm going to talk about something different, probably about Hubble, because you know what? There are a lot of articles today. I don't know why, but there's a lot of articles today on Hubble. There doesn't seem to be much else going on in the solar system these days. So we've been talking about Mars, and when we get back, we're going to talk about maybe Hubble, maybe something else. I'll see what I can find that's interesting, but right now it looks like Hubble. So this is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on 101.9.
We just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now, let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Master Dirty Red Scum! Take him in the teeth, red hats! Kill!
That's really
kill! Filthy bastard chummies! I hate him, I hate him!
Okay, well,
You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Don't get in no trouble.
You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on AstroTalk.
We got the refugees, all stars, rubber dubbing in the club. Y Club Jean.
Look at shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cash talking to her. Buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another one half hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. E, get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me, I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My food slang flow worldwide like a current. Went to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the math, you ain't half niggas at it. My man's claim true, you forget about it. Ho-ho, just a new stance, like my influence. Well recognized, you a lie trying to do it. Got you, told your lady, oops, we nuts, baby. Smooth and charismatic, automatic, you gon' save me. God bless the dead as my son survived. We strive to teach you, baby, and stay alive and alive.
You're back with Marco on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 FM.
Hello, welcome back. This is Marco on Astro Talk. We were talking about Mars. So, would they have Boxing Day on Mars? Would they have Black Friday? What would Black Friday be like on Mars? Would there be a Walmart on Mars? Wouldn't that be cool if in the future they had these things? If they had these things, that means we colonized Mars and we have cities there. And maybe for Christmas dinner, we could say, hey, Mom, let's go to Auntie Edna's house on Mars for Christmas. Why not? And then the whole family would pack up and fly to Mars. Hopefully, could that happen? Hopefully it does. Hopefully we colonize Mars and then we start exploring the solar system. And then, like I said last week, there's a lot of projects online that want to go to beyond the solar system to do experiments in interstellar space and to actually have telescopes in interstellar space. There's actually one design telescope that would use the something about the bending abilities of the sun. It's a large object, so if we had a lens out there in interstellar space beyond our solar system, and then the light was focused towards the sun, and then it bent around the sun and it converged at a point behind the sun, we would have a super telescope. We could actually view things on other planets, on other stars. Now, wouldn't that be cool? We could, instead of just inferring things from the light, properties are because of what happens to the light we receive, we could actually see something. Now, the future, definitely, if we're around, hopefully Donald Trump doesn't blow us up before that, but we will do some exciting things in outer space. So today we talked about Mars. Now, I think this generation now, they didn't grow up when people went to the moon. And when that happened, people were so excited. Yeah, we'll be at Mars in 10 years. Well, it's been about 40, 45 years, and we are not anywhere close to Mars. There are a lot of things to consider. One thing that we said just now was the radiation on Mars. There is a very faint atmosphere on Mars, very wispy, hardly any atmosphere. So one thing that happens in Mars is the water evaporates. The water that is still there, it's underground, it's protected by some kind of surface. So we have to, a lot of things to consider before going to Mars. Okay, so let's go look at another article. This one is dated December 29th, 2016, which is today, and it's about our old friend Hubble, the wonderful telescope that has given us so much. Now, the title of the article is Hubble Gazes at a Cosmic Megamaser, whatever that is. That's all one word. Okay, there's a picture of something there. It looks like a galaxy, but it's kind of a weird ball. But one chunk of the ball is missing, so maybe some alien took a big bite out of it or something. But anyway, here we go. This galaxy has a far more exciting and futuristic classification than most. So what we're looking at is a galaxy. It hosts a megamaser. Megamasers are intensely bright, around 100 million times brighter than the masers found in galaxies like the Milky Way. What's a maser? The entire galaxy essentially acts as an astronomical laser that beams out microwave emission rather than visible light, hence the M replacing the L. So a laser, we usually see visible light, and this astronomical laser beams out microwave emission. We can't see it. So instead of the L in laser, we put an M and we call it a maser. Okay, and this is not just a maser, it's a megamaser. A megamaser is a process where some components within a galaxy, like gas clouds, are in the right stimulated physical condition to radiate intense energy, in this case, microwaves. This megamaser galaxy is named IRAS 16399-0937, and it is located over 370 million light years from Earth. This NASA European Space Agency Hubble telescope image belies the galaxy's energetic nature, instead painting it as a beautiful and serene cosmic rosebud. The image comprises observations captured across various wavelengths by two of Hubble's instruments, the Advanced Camera for Surveys, ACS, and the Near Infrared Camera and Multi-Object Spectrometer. The Multi-Object Spectrometer's superb sensitivity, resolution, and field of view gave astronomers the unique opportunity to observe the structure of IRAS 16390937 in detail. They found it hosts a double nucleus. The galaxy's core is thought to be formed of two separate cores in the process of merging. The two components, named IRAS 16399N and IRAS 16399S, for the northern and southern parts. For the northern and southern parts, respectively, sit over 11,000 light years apart. However, they are both buried deep within the same swirl of cosmic gas and dust, and interacting, given the galaxy its peculiar structure. the nuclei are very different. IRAS 16399 South, or S, appears to be a starburst region where new stars are forming at an incredible rate. The northern part, however, is sometimes known as a liner nucleus. So that's big L, big I, big N, big E, big R, liner nucleus. So L stands for low, I stands for ionization, N stands for nuclear, E stands for emission, and R stands for region, which is a region whose emission mostly stems from weakly ionized or neutral atoms of particular gases. The northern nucleus also hosts a black hole with some 100 million times the mass of the sun, very big. Okay, so let's wrap up the air. We talked about a lot of interesting things, and again, I have to apologize. I went down in August. I traveled to Washington State, to the Tri-Cities, to interview Dr. Mike Landry. We did a good two-hour interview, and then I interviewed another person who was doing research on neutron stars. He found there was one particular neutron star had a bump in it, like a dimple. And because of this, and to do with possibly its rotation, a lot of other factors, it was emitting very weak gravitational waves. So I had all that nicely recorded, and I went to Mexico, and when I came back, it was not on my recording machine, so I did something wrong. So I have to apologize. I really look forward to giving you that, but I couldn't. Other than that, we looked at a lot of interesting things. I started out by just reading articles, and I thought that was more spontaneous. So anyway, I hope everybody has a good year, and I was thinking of going up north to see the Northern Lights, but then you have to brave the cold, so I don't know if I will do that. So anyway, we talked about a lot of different astronomy topics. A lot of them had to do with Saturn and the Cassini mission in Saturn, which has discovered a lot of great science. There was the New Horizons mission to Pluto, where the exact of orbit of Pluto wasn't known before the mission was launched. So scientists had to recalibrate and refigure the flight path of the spacecraft New Horizons, because when it got there, the flight or its line of flight would have to be calculated along the way, because Pluto has not gone around the sun once since we have discovered it in 1930. I don't even think it's gone around half of its orbit. So there was not accurate data on the exact orbit of Pluto. So when the rocket set off, they were kind of saying, well, let's shoot here and hopefully we can recalibrate on the way. So that's what they did. But they didn't know when they got there whether when they opened their camera whether Pluto would be there. But it was. So the scientists did great work and they did a lot of good science and a lot of new things were discovered. I read a few years ago that what was known about Pluto could fit on a page or two. Hubble Space Telescope cannot image it very well, and there were no spacecrafts that had gone to Pluto before. So we learned so much about Pluto that we didn't know this year. There was also the Rosetta mission, where the European Space Agency landed a spacecraft on the comet, but then something went wrong and they couldn't find it. And then it was in a cold region, it didn't get enough sunlight, it didn't warm up, the sun wasn't hitting it with enough intensity, so that was lost. But there was a lot of great discoveries on Mars, water on Mars, a lot of things. So 2016 was a great year for NASA and a lot of research on Mars. And we're getting closer to the launch of the James Webb Telescope. After that, it will be the WFIRST telescope. And I had a professor on here that was working on that, so we had a nice little interview. And I don't forget the name, so I will acknowledge you next time. So I think it was a good year for NASA. I had a lot of fun, so I hope you'll listen next year. I'm signing off now for the year. And if you go to any cool parties, like on Mars or the moon or something, let us know when you come back. So once again, this is Marco signing off. We're on planet Earth, believe it or not. We are on planet Earth. So thank you. This is Marco signing off for 2016 on I'm going to get a website, Marco, www.marcosastrotalk.com. And I will have a talk show and do a lot of a lot of talk shows about material science, Triumph, NASA, a lot of different things. So I hope you tune into that. So have a good year. Thank you for listening. This is Marco. You're signing off on WW. And you know what? Why don't I just sign off with the song I started with today, TQ on the West Side. This is Marco signing off. You've been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.